to Minority Corner
with an Eke
and James,
the Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues,
only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike.
Week on Minority Corner, episode 166, for our first guest co-host filling in for our neighborhood librarian, Eneke, as she's on maternity leave, we have the various hilarious New York-based comedian Glory Mora in the house today. She's joining us in the corner, and we have so much to talk about. We dive into cancel culture, the right way to apologize for some past social media shit one shouldn't have probably said in the first place, and Glory catches me up on the drama on the Braxton Family Values. I had no idea we all should have been tuning in. I watched Netflix's Siempre Bruja, which should be a win dealing with, you know, the colonial slave time Colombia, but it is a giant, well, not a giant, but you'll see. It's a bit of a misstep on this one. And Glory is right at home as we go into Tangent City, as we do here on the corner. And then we jump over to the main event. I'm going to give you the lowdown on two black folks in honor of Black History Month that you probably haven't heard of and should have heard about because they're so dope and these two people need to have movies ASAP. One was a badass stagecoach, which we alluded to a few weeks ago, and the other was an escaped pirate slave. Just wait to hear about these two folks. They're so dope. And Glory will finish out the episode giving you the insight about the Divine Nine, the black fraternity and sororities, and some prominent members that hail from her very own sorority, Zeta Phi Beta. And along the way, Glory will be fact-checking and letting us know everyone's star sign and keeping the giggles going. So let's jump into it. Glory, Glory's on the show. Welcome to Minority Corner, Glorales.
Let's pop with everybody.
Did I say it right?
No,
Glorales.
No, it's okay. You're still my friends. I forgive you. I've said it.
I know that I've said it once correctly.
It's like Glorales.
Oh, you know what it was? Yeah. It's not in front of me right now.
Exactly.
Because so Glory and I know each other. Yeah. She's a famous stand-up comic up and coming stand-up comic.
Up and coming famous. No, I'm kidding.
Up and coming famous. Okay, person.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Hilarious lady. And we took a stand-up comedy class together. Yeah. And I introduced you once, and you were like, oh my god, you said my name correctly, and I was so proud of myself. And so this morning I was like, I'm gonna impress her.
Honestly, James, I don't think any of my friends or my exes can say my name, so you're good.
But tell the listeners, what's the story behind your name?
My name, well, I'm Dominican.
Yes.
You should probably let people know that.
Okay, here she is.
I'm the Dominican girl.
Yeah.
But I consider myself Black Dominican. We can talk about that Afro-Latina stuff later.
Yeah. Let's talk about that.
We can talk about it. I got some shit to say after my
Because there's a TV show that is about Afro-Latinas.
On Netflix, right, I think?
Siempre Bruja.
But I heard it was whack. I mean, I don't know.
I saw the first episode.
Okay. Okay, so we'll
circle
talk
back.
About it. Okay,
we'll put a pin in it.
Okay.
All right, so you're already doing so. This is the one thing that we do at Minority Corner so well. Tangent.
Name and then show.
Okay. Yeah,
My mom made it up.
Okay.
I could tell, she just made my name up. She got it fucked up. It was supposed to be named after my grandmother, but my grandma's name was Sophia, not Gloria.
Should your name be like
it's Sophia Ellis.
Oh.
I mean, it should have, I guess.
And Sophia Yelis.
See, I can't even say that shit.
Sophia Yelis.
Yeah.
I'm practicing my Spanish because I'm going to España about like a month in the summertime.
But you know, they speak like, I think, I don't know, their Spanish
is different.
It's different.
It's like European, it's like British Spanish.
Yeah, it's like extra. Like doing the most.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of doing the most, so back to like Siempre Bruja.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell me about that shit because I heard about it, but I didn't watch it.
Well, one of our corner kids plugged it because I had been hearing about the show and they were like, so this looks kind of problematic. So the idea, it seems really exciting because it's set in Cartagena, which I've been there.
Okay.
I used to work on a cruise ship and we were docking Cartagena.
What, James? What were we doing there?
From the entertainment staff.
That's so dope. I didn't even
know that. Bingos to line dancing to napkin folding.
Yo, honestly, I've been looking into that.
We'll talk later.
No? Okay.
I mean, do it as a kid. I think if you're a comedian, you'd have to get some clean material.
I got so much. I don't have to talk about ho shit on the cruise.
I have a problem doing family friendly stand up comedy. All of my jokes are like dick and penis and cum shots and jizz. Like that's my whole thing.
I got some clean shit.
I don't.
You know what? All my shit is about white people.
You have a lot of white people on those ships.
Yeah, but you're right.
Speaking of, and a lot of white people colonizing things. So back Sierra Bruja, so it's really fascinating because at first it seems really exciting because it's about like an Afro-Latina witch.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah.
And like who's was back in like 1646 and ends up in today, right?
Oh, that's interesting.
And so, but what ends up happening is she's trying to go back to the day of yesterday to get back with her white Spanish love.
Yeah. Whoa.
So essentially like the guy who bought her, she was in love with him. And, well, like, I know, like, through, like, rape and stuff, but, which they kind of gloss over that. They're just like, they were in love, and so, she was a slave.
Netflix buys her. Netflix wanted to green light a show about an Afro-Latina, but somehow still had to put a white man in this shit.
Yeah. And that's, it's exciting because it's, like, it's very rarely do I feel like when we talk about, like Latin America or South America or even Spain in general, people forget that they were involved in the slave trade too.
Yeah.
And so I was like, ooh, this is really exciting. They're touching on this.
Yeah.
He falls in love with her because she's a slave and they're writing notes to each other. And the mother's like, Bruja! Like, how does she know how to read and write?
She must be a witch.
And so they burn her.
What?
They burn her.
That's dramatic, real easy.
And then she like goes to the future and then she's just trying, and she finds her other coven of witches. They're like, we were expecting you. And I don't know, it's falling in and out of sleep because it's kind of boring.
I'm going to have to watch it because, like, I've heard it was a little, not problematic. I don't know if it's problematic. I just heard this one shit and I need to watch it.
Well, it's weird because it's doing some things right. I think if you just took out, like, she was in love with this white Spanish guy who, like, yeah, I mean, like, he was like, Dad, let's buy her. She seems nice. And then, like, he didn't, like, whip her or anything. But she does heal people who get whipped. So they do talk about, like, the fucked up things that are happening with slavery.
This sounds a lot.
It's, yeah. So, Siempre Bruja, check it out on Netflix. Let us know what you think.
I'm gonna have to check it out. I wanna see whenever I see something problematic, I always, like, go to Twitter
But you gotta be careful with that. Wait, I do want to talk about cancel culture with you because I have some questions.
Yeah, I will talk about everything.
But you watched The Braxton Family Values, and what? I wanted to bring this up because I've been watching. I grew up with Toni Braxton.
Okay.
And
break my heart. I can't
say you love me again. Yes, her Toni, who she went bankrupt because of a baby face.
Wait, again?
Well, no, not again, but like the first time.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I'm confusing. I'm sorry. Because she was dating someone named Baby. Okay, we're talking
Babyface. Because Babyface owns LaFace Records.
No, I know Babyface is the R&B, but she was dating the rapper Baby.
Oh, she can't get away from that Baby name.
Wait, isn't
she
that his name?
Babies. She just got babies on the brain.
No, because I'm like, wait, she did not. Wait, hold on. Isn't that his name, the rapper?
There's the artist guy named Babyface.
I know, but her ex-boyfriend that she just broke up with.
Her
name is Baby.
See, she's got a baby thing. She's obsessed with babies. Yeah, Toni Braxton got baby on the brain.
Wait, isn't it it's Birdman, but they also call him Baby.
See, she just wants them babies.
My bad, sorry. The point of the story,
So she was on Babyface Records. Like, if you ever get an offer to get a music contract with LaFace Records.
I don't think I'm gonna ever get one.
Well, turn it down. Because they're gonna bankrupt you. Happened to TLC. Like, they just can't handle their money. But I lost track of her after she disappeared. And then I've been watching Big Brother, Celebrity Big Brother, and Tamara Braxton is on there, and she is a lot.
Yeah, she's a Cancer.
I'm a Cancer.
I know. That's what I want to tell you, but she.
Oh, I'm supposed to be like allies with her because we're the same. Very moody.
I gotta fact check. You know, I always gotta fact check.
Okay,
I'm pretty sure.
I do appreciate this.
Yeah. Oh no, she's a Pisces. I knew she was some kind of water shit.
Okay.
She's emotional.
Okay, what are you trying to say?
Let me not get. Let me not get kicked off. It's my bad.
Well, all right. Thanks, Lori. Thanks, Sophia Lees. Thanks for showing up. But wait, you've been watching that. I've heard about the Braxton Family Values. I have never seen an episode.
Yeah, I don't watch the. Okay. I think I have an acronym for it: Braxton Family Values, BFB.
Oh, that's the hashtag?
Yeah, that's the hashtag.
Ooh,
but
hashtag.
When I saw that Ayanla Fixed My Life was going
to
be in the episode, I had to watch it.
Sign me up. I wish Ayanna would come and fix my life.
Well, I do text a lot of my exes. Like, I always recycle them, so maybe she can help me break that cycle. Because I'm afraid of starting a new relationship.
I think what you should do is I think you've got to make her life even messier.
My life or her life?
Your life.
More messier?
Yes. Because then she'll come and fix your life. Just kind of like half messy, she won't come and do it. You got to go all the way.
I mean, I don't know if I could get more messy. She should have caught me a few years ago.
Okay.
That's when I was messy. I'm a grown ass woman.
Go back to that.
She goes to the show. Mm-hmm. And I watched the recap. I watched this like montage recap on YouTube. Yeah. Because I wasn't going to sit there and watch the whole thing.
To get caught up.
It was messy. James,
tell me.
It was just like a lot of drama between like the whole family. It was a lot of drama. There was a lot of epiphanies too. Like they were talking about how like the mom favors one child over the other.
Tony, the one with the money.
I don't know if it was Tony. I can't remember.
How would you not favor the one? They're all famous because of Tony Braxton.
Yeah, but like Tony was also like very like, y'all are my family because I was born into this. If I had a choice, I wouldn't be here.
Damn. Yeah. Like I'm wondering, like, is this fabricated drama or is this like real?
Honestly, I want to say this is not fabricated. It can't be.
Who like would just let their life unfold in front of the cameras like for everyone to see? I just don't know who.
I think some
and they're getting
people,
paid too.
They do, but some people, you know, I don't know. Like some of you can see behavioral change. Like some people are okay with sharing their life in the open.
I would be okay. Like I'd go in the real world because I'm with a bunch of strangers. Yeah. And I don't give a fuck. But like with my fam, I feel like there's just something more. Like when it's your family, like airing that out.
Yeah, some people are different. I mean, but they're all famous. So I guess like
and
at
they're
this
addicted
point,
to that fame. Well, that, like, keep the cameras rolling.
But at this point, if your life is already out there, you might as well like
just keep it going.
Share it.
But it must be like an ego thing, though.
Maybe
it's like, gotta.
But it's also maybe a paycheck thing, James.
I think it's ego and paycheck because, like, let's face it.
Yeah,
ain't nobody buying their records anymore.
Yeah,
but people love a Kardashian type situation. We love watching rich, trashy people on TV.
Okay, we love watching other people fuck up their lives.
Yeah,
and put their family on display. Are me and you doing that? No, I'm not doing that.
I guess like reality TV like this, it's like the Hunger Games we let them be the tributes of like let their lives fuck up before us. And then
I was gonna say that Braxton signed up for that first
before the Kardashians.
No, I'm saying like they signed up to be the tribute. I don't want to, because I think they end up becoming the tribute,
right? Like you all signed up for this. Yeah. Like we didn't ask you to do this.
But I will say, I think the episode, I mean, I don't watch the Kardashians. I think that they're just like around the house all day like, oh my god, look at my outfit, oh my god, Kanye, like he's having a meltdown, I'm gonna let him have one because money.
Yeah.
Right,
very true.
But I think this episode with that Young Love fabricator, now I think is very important, especially to people of color. They talk a lot about like
therapy.
It was a very therapeutic episode, a lot about like things that have happened in the past.
Yeah.
That sometimes in our cultures, like we just kind of keep to ourselves and like we don't talk about it.
Right.
Like even your relationship with your parents, like it was a lot.
Like therapy is actually like, I think it's starting to change and shift. Yeah. Like even like they talk about this on Insecure. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a huge proponent of like fan of therapy. Yeah. Like I was in therapy. I won't date someone unless they've been in therapy.
Yeah. After I went to therapy, like you better be going to therapy too, because I had some shit.
And like, I know you've got shit too.
I'm also not about to be your free therapist. Like you asked me for like, oh, what did you talk to your therapist about today? It's like, no, you need to go and talk to your
thing.
Own, right?
You do you. But I think it's been something that's so frowned upon within like the Black community about therapy. But I think there's always reasons for something. I think it's probably like there's a mistrust of like science and doctors anyways, because Black people have been so mistreated by like the Tuskegee lab experiments where like we've been fucked over by like scientists and doctors for so long.
Yeah.
And you're just like, God will take care of it.
I think that's the idea.
Just pray it away.
Like, I got a lot of people to take care of, you know?
Busy. God helps those who help themselves.
Right.
Like, go get that therapy.
He said about free will in the Bible.
Exactly. So you gotta go do it.
But I just think it's like a cultural, like we're just so used to like being, I don't know, like we just gone through a lot, you know, and I just think it's hard to even talk about it. Sometimes when you talk about it, you gotta explore it and revisit again.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't want to go back there, you know, like
it's too hurtful.
Yeah. That's why I kind of had to quit therapy. Like I was like, oh my God, I don't want to talk about this right now. So I went.
Interest, tell me more. I'm just kidding.
Right, you're like, let me get the cancer right now. It's just like, I don't want to revisit something, so.
Yeah, I do understand that. And I think, and this isn't you, but I do think like generationally, like we've become, well, I think there's just two things. Like I think sometimes we can wallow too much in our hurt and our pain and our trauma. And sometimes like, I think it's important for us to feel our hurt and our trauma to move through it, and but not like dwell on
it. That's what I got the most from therapy, because I'm a Gemini and I'm very detached. Right? I didn't mean to bring the horoscope shit, right?
Who else wants to get the horoscope read? Just tweet at Minority Corner.
No, but like I'm very detached, but also like emotional at the same time. time. It's really weird because my moon is in Pisces. I know it's a lot.
Okay, that's a lot.
But, right, it's a lot. Detached but emotional.
And then you're like, well, what is your Saturn rising moon sign?
Right, but my Saturn is in Capricorn, but we don't have to go through that one. Sorry. No, but like, I feel like one thing that I did learn from therapy was that you have to... It's important to process and feel.
Oh, yes.
And I think that's something that I didn't... I just went to like, okay, it happened. I'm moving on. That didn't even happen. But then some people, they feel too much and you just like...
You gotta move through it.
You paralyze yourself.
Absolutely. Well, I think also too, I think what happens sometimes, like, especially like millennials and progressive millennials, we get so stuck on just like... I'm so traumatized.
Everybody owes me something.
I can't do anything right now. And I'm just like, you know what? If the abolitionists were as traumatized and triggered as we all seem to be, I'd still be in chains.
Right.
They're like, oh, I just can't. Jedediah, I'd love to help you free the slaves, but every time I see a whip, I just get triggered.
Right.
I just get triggered. I gotta exactly. Do me.
So we have to just find a balance, you know?
Speaking of, like, is it going too far? Is it not? You're a comedian. I am a comedian.
I do tell jokes.
What? And that's the thing is
when I'm not talking all the time.
Well, when is that?
That was a joke.
Oh. It's like,
this bitch is always talking.
There's some things that, like, so cancel culture. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about that?
We could talk about it, James.
I'm so perplexed by it because it's just like, when do we cancel something? When do we not? Why did it take so long to, like, stop listening to R. Kelly's music?
I've been stopped listening to his shit.
Me too. Yeah. And you know what? I don't think I Believe You Can Fly is that great anyway.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, annoying. Honestly.
His music wasn't that great.
Right. This shit is repetitive.
You know who liked it? White people.
They did like that shit.
Ignition, let's play it. I'm like, okay, I'm over it.
Yeah,
but it took a long time to cancel him. But then we have like folks that like comedians who like people are digging through their tweets and finding stuff.
I feel like, I don't know, I think I'm one of them, those. I feel like you can't, because I think a lot of the comedians' argument is like, you can't do comedy and be PC. And I don't think that is true. I think every comedian is different.
Yeah.
And I think that when it comes from a mean-spirited place, that's when you go into issues. Like, if you're not a mean-spirited comedian and you're talking about, like, I say shit all the time about white people, and it's like, you know, I'm just trying to tell you, like, you guys aren't shit and we just want to work through it.
So you're being their therapist. You're like, let's work through this.
I want to work through this with you through comedy.
Yeah. Okay? Let's have a laugh.
We're
going to
talk about
it.
Your Lululemon issues. Right?
Yeah.
But I do think I have an issue. Like, I was really, I don't know, like, I was really, I don't know what the word is, but I couldn't find the words clearly for Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
When he did the whole thing, like when you found his tweets about the gay community.
Right.
And it's because, like, when you go back to his specials, he does talk. I feel, you know, I'm about to go on a tangent.
No, go for it. Tangent it
up. I feel like what you joke about is something that you either battled with or, like, bothered you extremely. And I think that a lot
That's true. Because a lot of comedians, like, when I am in a shitty mood or something pisses me off, I go straight to my joke pad and I start writing jokes about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think at 50%, I always believe there's some truth to your humor, right? And I'm not saying that Kevin Hart needs to be canceled. I love Kevin Hart. Yeah. I think that he's one of my one of my muses.
Yeah.
But I do think that he let his ego get in the way and he should have just... It doesn't matter, like, if you have to apologize a million times. Maybe, I think he should have really taken that opportunity to start a platform about cancel culture.
It was a great opportunity.
It was like, you
want to
dismiss the conversation, but no, it's a learning opportunity. Yeah. I think... The cancel culture comes in. I think there's like two things that come into play. There's like what you say and your action. I think someone like R. Kelly, his actions.
Oh, yes.
Like, that needs to be canceled yesterday. That last
Why
scene in 1482.
Here?
Like, wherever the fuck Tempe Bruja came from.
As soon as he.
Yeah, like, he needed to be
as
canceled.
As soon as we were like, he's peeing on underage girls.
Right, because I think there's the thing where, like, you're invading on someone. I always believe, like, you know, morality or, like, you're doing good is, like, as long as you don't impose on somebody else's life and their choices and their freedom, do you, boo. Right? Exactly. That's why I have an issue with white people, because you're in the way. Right.
Yeah, let me do
your
thing.
You're in the way, right? So, like, someone like R. Kelly, you're taking away somebody's choice to have a good-ass life. And you really, like, fucked up some people, right?
Yeah.
Someone like Kevin Hart, I don't think it needed to be canceled. I think there needed to be a conversation.
But it's like he shut it down himself.
That's what I'm saying. That's another issue. Now I have an issue. I can't see you the same.
And just, like, acknowledging that, like, you know, when he talks about, like, I would murder my son if I was gay. Like, there's literally, like, it just came out in the news. Like, something like that happened. So it's like he's joking about something that does, like, happen.
Yeah.
I want to bring up that there's I'm a huge Damon Wayans Jr. Do you know Damon Wayans Jr.?
I know him.
He's so funny. I used to watch him on, he was on the show called Happy Endings, which which was a funny version of Friends. Mm-hmm. I didn't think Friends was funny. What was nice about Damon...
You know what? I'm not gonna lie to you. Friends is my shit. I know it's problematic. Really? I love Friends.
There's no... You born and raised here in New York.
Yeah.
Friends has...
I've never watched Seinfeld.
There was a black lady. Aisha Tyler joined the cast in the 10th season.
I know, I saw
her. They didn't meet into a black person until the 10th season.
Okay, well, can I say something, James? Okay. I know we're gonna go back to Damon Wayans, but I didn't have cable growing up, okay? I was just taking whatever was given to me.
Sure.
Whatever the fuck they were running on the free channels.
That's what you're watching.
That's what I'm saying.
And there was a lot of Friends
right,
on there.
Right, so like they kept repeating like Friends, Friends, Friends. So like that's what I grew up with, you know? I
didn't. Not Living Single?
I didn't have cable. I didn't like.
Living Single wasn't on the repeats?
I don't. Honestly, like I just got.
Give yourself the gift of life.
No, I know. I've been watching it now.
Because Living Single came out before Friends. Friends copied Living Single.
And I know. I know that. I know the history now. But I just want to show when I was an 8-year-old, 10-year-old girl in middle school, that's what I was taking with me. Wishbone.
Okay. You don't have to unearth. This isn't therapy. You don't have to unearth all your stuff.
I have cable.
These listeners just met you today.
But I do. You know what? I like Friends.
Yeah.
For what it, like, you know, I thought it was, I like the witty humor.
Yeah. I mean, everyone was watching it and agreed. And I just like looking back, here's the thing. But Damon Wayans Jr. was on a show called Happy Endings. Uh-huh. And it's sort of like it's like six friends, uh-huh. but there's a gay guy on it. And then there's a black guy on it. Uh-huh. So just like for me, anytime you get diversity in, I'll show up.
Right.
So Damon Wayans Jr. had some like homophobic tweets from the past, like he using the word like tranny and fag and all this sort of stuff, and like he's like, I'm eating a veggie burger, hashtag no homo, like, and he's on the New Girl, and like he's very, very funny. I think he's actually I think he's the funniest of the Wayans.
Yeah,
like,
is that the, sorry, because I know there's...
He's Damon Wayans' senior son.
The one that is like,
It's not Marlon or...
Damon?
Yeah.
Damon?
Yeah, that's Damon. Cool. I know, funny. He's hilarious.
And he was on My Wife and Kids.
No, that's his dad.
Oh,
his
wait,
His dad
wait,
was on
okay.
My Wife and Kids.
Oh, that's, oh wait, Damon
Which
Wayans...
My Wife and Kids was great, too, with Tisha Campbell, who was on Martin.
Okay.
She
oh, Damon Wayans Jr.
See that? Not Damon Wayans.
Oh, okay.
Junior,
okay.
His son. And he's like, this junior is like, he's so fucking funny. But he had some homophobic tweets, but he actually like came out and apologized like flat on. He was like, this was inappropriate, this was wrong. And I was like, that's
trying
like,
to get them paychecks.
That's the way to, the way to like, you know, I think that's the way to do it. I think first and foremost, I think step one, like, don't be an asshole.
That's step one.
Step one. But don't tweet about it. Don't do it. Don't say it. Don't be an asshole.
But we all, that my thing with step one is that we've all, it doesn't matter how perfect we are.
Because 20 all, years away from now, who knows what we're saying that people are going to look back and be like, we need to cancel that.
Right. But I feel like, I don't know if I would be canceled. I've always been a good friend of you.
Okay. Things might change.
Right. Like, oh, things well, we found this tip from Glory.
Wow. Wishbone.
No, I'm saying.
Wishbone was a child murderer. And we said that you love Wishbone.
I think this is an interesting approach.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie to you, and I kind of like it.
Yeah.
Like, the idea that you can recognize that... Well, part of it is, like, the difference is, like, if you are someone, like... I'm trying to think, like, if someone like Harvey Weinstein came and was like, I did this and this and that, it would be... I think that's a little different.
Yeah, he's like, I raped all these women.
And I think that's the difference between saying and doing. You know, he said this.
Yeah.
So he's like, I'm going to apologize for what I said.
Yeah.
And I know that it might have been taken the wrong way.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the tweets yet. It hasn't come up. I just woke up a few hours
ago.
Okay,
welcome to
right.
Good morning.
Right.
Happy Sunday.
But I think that's the difference between saying and doing. I think with doing, like, you need help.
Yeah.
I think Ayanla is going to be in business for some time.
Bring her back. Could Ayanla fix Harvey Weinstein?
I don't know.
Actually, don't go near him.
Right.
He'll probably masturbate into a pot, Ayanla.
Right. I don't know
away.
If she could fix that. And I think that's a conversation bigger than us. I think that's
sure,
a conversation
that's
for therapists. Mm. Like, I'm not about to hate me.
I just want to make, like, I do think, like, there's, for me, I think people are very forgiving, and I think there has to be an opportunity for, like, people to be able to forgive. Like, even, like, the Liam Neeson thing that happened.
Oh, you won't take it there today.
I know. But, like, I think that even the Liam Neeson thing, think the problem was, I think he was trying to say, I used to have these racist thoughts, and he went and got help for it. I think what he was saying...
Didn't he say he walked racism off?
He went to go try to, like, murder the first black person they saw. But then he went to go, like, get help from it. And he was trying to say... The problem is, he was saying it in the context...
The problem is that he needs a publicist, and he needs a black publicist, and he needs to stop talking to these white people, okay?
Which goes to the other... That connects the other thing of, like, why... People need to have more people of color in their lives because
in their lives, yes, not even on your team, in your lives,
because shit like this won't happen, and people will be like, "No, you don't want to say it," or something like that.
Help me stop.
Like with the Gucci thing,
I think Gucci's a little different. I think they're capitalizing on black rage. I think that this, all these fashion brands, like, you know.
So for those who don't know, the Gucci had a, what was it, a sweater?
It was like blackface.
Like, looks like blackface lips, essentially.
And it's like, who was the art? No, matter of fact, come clean, the art director. Who the fuck was the one that was like, hey, let's do this? That's a person.
So do you think it was intentional to look like blackface?
I think it was intentional. Where?
Which is why it goes back to the point of like.
Why do you apologize if it wasn't intentional?
Right. Well, no, because they're like, ooh, we didn't. I think it goes to the same thing. I remember H&M did the coolest monkey in the jungle thing. It was like this young black boy wearing a thing that's the coolest monkey in the jungle. And so it goes again, like, once again, like.
I don't shop there, by the way, but there's a clothes sheet.
And also, like, the thing where, like, when PETA was trying to, like, say that, like, using the N-word is equivalent to, like.
Whoa.
Using, like.
Whoa.
I remember they were, like, trying to equate something about, like, saying.
No.
Oh, saying, like, I'm going to beat a dead horse is, like, using the N-word or something. And it's like,
not.
Nah. And this goes back to, like, why you need to have more people of color on your team, because someone would be like, no, don't do that.
Right.
Don't do that.
But James, let me be real with you. I used to work in advertising. Even when you are the black or the brown person in the team, these white people, decision makers, they'd be like, oh, it sounds cool. Do it anyways. You know what I'm saying?
Well, so I don't want to. We need to go up to the top.
Yeah.
Because Spike Lee did a thing where he was like, he's not doing anything. He said, no more Prada, no more Gucci until they start hiring more black designers.
Yeah.
More people of color.
Decision makers.
Yeah, the decision makers need to be there at the top, because it's going to save y'all. Like, here's the thing, what now, though, that like, people vote with their dollars.
Yes, that's a fact.
And so, like, if you want to stay in business, like, you're going to, like, save yourself more money down the line by hiring a more diverse. Everyone benefits from diversity.
Yeah, everybody. Even the whites, because you get that's where you get your ideas from, babe. Okay?
That's where you're stealing from, Vaughn.
Right. So, I don't know. We talked about so much, I'm very upset.
Well, okay. Well, I'm going to get you something more exciting. We're going to get into the rest of the show.
Okay.
Did you have one more thing you wanted to talk about?
I think, did we close out on cancel culture? Did we finish that conversation?
I feel like we left it up, and, you know, it's open for the, you know, it's going to be a competition that we're not going to solve here. We're no Ayala's.
Yeah, right.
We're not going to be fixing that issue right
but
now.
But we did, sorry, because, you know, my brain's
going.
Okay, so we.
Okay.
Yo, I'm
obvious. That was great.
We did cancel. We did Gucci.
Yeah.
We did. Okay, we're good.
We're good. I think we hit the Braxtons. We had all kinds of stuff.
Okay.
So I want to get you in a better mood. I'm going to get you something hyped.
Oh.
We're going to talk about two historic black folks that you might not have heard about.
Okay, I probably heard.
In honor of Black History Month.
Ow. You don't have, like, sound effects that do, like.
You're doing it for us. It's like morning radio. You're doing all the sound effects. What do you need to go?
I'm sorry.
But two historic black people that you may not have heard of that should become movies.
Yes, James, yes.
Greetings. I am Plek Dexsetter, contacting you from the Zik Squadron, which is, frankly, sort of crappy, but I'm here on a heroic mission with my trusty crew, C-53.
Heroic feels like an exaggeration.
Okay, sure. And Security Officer Dar.
Plek, don't put me in your stupid recording.
Well, and we're all traveling aboard our trusty starship, the Bargerian Jade. Bargy.
What? Sorry. I'm awake.
It's fine.
I was just flying while asleep.
Hey there, this is Alden Ford. I play Plek, and we are so excited to announce that our podcast, Mission to Zix, is now part of the Maximum Fun Network. Our third season launches on Max Fun on March 20th. Binge seasons 1 and 2 right now. That's Mission to Zix, ZYXX.
To get movies?
Yeah, see, let's get some fucking movies out here.
Wait, what if it's not? Okay, yes! Let's get some fucking movies in here.
Go.
This is your music.
Oh, no. What's the song? Give it to me.
I was going to do some ow shit. That's it.
Ow! Yeah. Movie time. Ow! Yeah.
Black
people in movies.
Okay! Yes! A jingle!
We love jingle jangles. Courtesy of The View, because, you know, I watch The View, like, every morning, every day.
Okay.
And they've been doing, like, a really good job of, like, black people. Like you think you know. Like they just feed you the same ones in school.
Martin
They're like
Payne.
Rosa Parks and, you know, and they've got the... We'll circle back to Rosa Parks, but, like, she wasn't just some tired old lady on a bus.
Right.
She was a freedom fighter.
Yeah.
It was very staged.
Yeah.
And anyways, but we'll put a pin in that.
Yeah.
That's not today.
Yeah.
So there's two that I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. This first one might take up so much time, we might have to put a pin in it and come back later. But the first one is Stagecoach Mary. Have you ever heard of Stagecoach Mary?
I actually haven't.
Boom!
Right.
See? I'm going to tell you her story. You're going to be like, this needs to be a fucking movie. Okay. So she was a hard drinking, quick shooting mail carrier, and she wore men's clothing and had a gun. She like could shoot a fucking gun. This is the 1890s.
What's her name again?
Stagecoach Mary. Okay. You're going to look her up. You want to see how badass she is?
I want to see. I got to know.
Yeah, you're going to visualize her. So she was the first African-American woman to carry mail, and she stood out on the trail, and she was like, there's a huge legend. She was born Mary Fields in 1832, born into slavery, because that's what was happening.
Yeah, that's what was happening.
At the time.
Right.
So some people like think that she was born in, like, they're not sure exactly when and where. Because of slavery, it's hard to have exact like dates and locations of where black folks were born back then. So that's why it's really hard for us to do like the 23andMe, because like our trail only goes back so far.
Yeah.
So she was...
Well, first of all, I don't want to do 23andMe. We'll talk about that later.
They'll take your DNA. They're and make trying clones.
To. Right. They're doing the most. Y'all wilding when y'all be submitting to that. But let me not fuck up your advertising dollars.
They're not coming our way.
Right.
So she was maybe born like Hickman County, Tennessee. Somewhere in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And after the Civil War, she was like, fuck this. I'm getting out of this place. I don't want to be here in Slaveryville anymore.
That's exactly what the fuck I would
have
been doing.
She was like, I'm out. So she got on the Mississippi River. She was doing some odd jobs, working her way up the river, rolling up the river,
right,
as you do. And then she became a nun. Natural progression. But mind you, she loved to drink. But she was a nun at the Ursuline Convent of the Sacred Heart in Toledo, Ohio.
Okay.
This made me realize too, like, I have family on my dad's side from Ohio as well. And now I understand why there's like a good amount of black people who ended up going up to Ohio.
Yeah, there's a book on it. I forgot the name of it.
Because like after slavery, you just go up the Mississippi River, you end up in Ohio, you get as far away as you can. And I think that's also where the Black Wall Street ended up in Ohio as well, which white people then came in and slaughtered all the black people who were making money and massacred them.
Yeah.
We talked about that another episode before.
Sorry, I think the book was called The Great Migration.
Oh, yeah, that was.
What were you saying about the Sunday Sapoma got slaughtered?
Oh, there was I think it was the Tulsa riots, the Black Wall Street. Mm-hmm. I think that was in Ohio.
Okay.
Look, and we got our fact checker over here. I'm loving it. Usually I'm just like, I don't know. Figure it out. Google it.
Because people don't Google.
Oh, really?
They don't.
They just take everything I say for it.
Yeah.
Truth is truth.
It was in Ohio.
Oh, it was in Ohio?
Yeah.
See, I be knowing things. I got this information.
Oh, my jingle!
I remember things. Okay. Yeah. So she went up to Ohio. And she was like, sweet, I'm going to be a nun. This sounds like fun. Mm-hmm. But
why
she
all that, James?
Liked to drink and she liked her cigars. But I think she just liked maybe like the safety of nuns. Maybe she was a lesbian. We don't know. I don't know. She never had any children. But she was like, I'm going to be around these ladies. So the nuns complained that she was loud and difficult.
What?
AKA she was black.
Even back then, there was a white convent, obviously.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. Had a temper.
Right.
She was black, in case you didn't know.
So she was dealing with the shit we're dealing with now in corporate.
Same old story.
Yep.
It's a tale as old as time.
Right.
Going back to Siempre Bruja.
Right. Right.
So she was like, so she eventually went out to Montana. She was getting so much harassment there. Mm-hmm. She eventually went out to Montana, out to the West, because her BFF, Mother Superior, Mother Amadeus Dune, who was the only white lady who really got her.
Yeah.
So Amadeus Dune was out there, and she was like, she started like a school for, it's called the Blackfoot people, which I think was a Native American tribe.
Okay.
I don't know. Okay. Might have to Google that one.
Sometimes things cross.
They do. But I'm actually assuming she started a school there. She was working with a Jesuit priest there. And it was like, it was at the Wild West. Things were great. Mm-hmm. But I do think she was starting an assimilation tribe. But a lot of times when they were indoctrinating the young Native American children, they were like, go to this school.
Okay.
And they were like, lose all your customs, essentially.
Oh.
So I think that was happening. So that's...
The one white lady she trusted had... Wait.
I don't know for sure if that's what the school was doing, but historically, that's what the schools kind of did.
Nah, and I believe it. Honestly. Oh, man.
That's kind of what was happening.
You know, sometimes we befriend the wrong way.
But the West was the shit. Mm-hmm. Like, it was the place. So she went out there because her friend was sick. Sister Amadeus Dune was sick. Mm. So Mary went out there and she nursed her friend back to life because, you know, black girl magic was still happening there.
Forever.
Siempre Bruja.
Right. The revamped version.
The better version. She's not trying to go back to be no slave.
Right.
Here's the thing. So folks were nervous about Stagecoach Mary being around. Again, code word for she was black.
Right.
Because there's rumors of her behavior, especially of, like, her drinking, her smoking, her shooting guns, wearing men's clothing. So, like, people just, like, let her live, you know? Let her be her. But they were, like, not having it, so she got the boot. And so then she was an independent woman and she was like, fuck this, I'm gonna do my own thing. She was a 20th century woman stuck in the 19th century, you know?
Right, right.
She was ahead of her time. So she
would love to, honestly, like, James, you sold me. I would love to learn more about Mary Fields and see the movie.
Yeah, well, like, I'm gonna tell you more about her.
Okay, no, I know, but I wanna see the movie. I think
this is so badass, right? Yeah. Oh, I haven't gotten to the good parts yet. Like, this is just...
Oh, that was just the early scene?
Like, we're in, like, the first act, second act.
That's what I'm saying, she needs a movie.
She does. And so she was an entrepreneur. She was doing odd jobs, started her own business, and she was essentially known for being such a badass. And so going into postal work was a natural transition for her.
Yeah, I saw it because it was
dangerous work back then because people were always trying to rob the stagecoaches. It's true. And you know what? You see a lot of black women doing it.
Mm-hmm.
She was laying down the foundation for all these folks.
Right, that's important.
And so it was, like, very dangerous. Like you said, it still is today. So she could fire a gun, and she was tough, and she was huge. She was a big, tall woman. And so in 1895, she got a contract from the Postal Service to become a Star Route carrier.
Okay.
You know? I think that was the independent... It was an independent, like, Postal Service that she had signed up for. And so...
I don't want to plug in, but I think that was, like, the... Because back then, like, black people couldn't work for the USPS. So it was, like, an affiliate program. I just looked at...
That was good.
Right? Is that Google?
Get that Google.
All people need to know is... See, white people, y'all can do this too. Y'all just do a quick Google search.
A little quick Google.
Right.
Trump says something crazy. Google it. And then you'll be like, oh, what he's saying is not true.
But I think that's important to say. Sorry, Jason.
No, that's good. Yeah. Keep me 100. It takes a village.
You're right.
Teamwork.
No, but yeah, finish your... I want to know one more minute.
Well, and so she got into it. Because the stagecoach was donated by Mother Amadeus. Thank God she saved her
baby
life.
Baby girl?
Yeah.
What?
Good thing she saves us from Mama Amadeus because she helped her get her start as a stagecoach. And so she was fending off thieves, bandits, and
Monday through Friday?
That was her job.
Oh, my God.
You think fighting from dogs is crazy.
Right.
You're the crazy cat lady on the street.
Right.
And so she was only the second woman to ever hold down this job. First African-American woman. And she was known as either Stagecoach Mary or Black Mary. But who was calling her Black Mary?
The whites.
You know? She carried a rifle and a revolver. So she was packing heat.
Okay.
She was using her Second Amendment right.
Right.
Because you needed it back then.
Yeah.
She had rocky terrain she was traversing for. It. Shitty weather, snow, heat. It's just, Montana's got it all. And again, fending off robberies, all kinds of stuff. She did the job for 8 years and then she retired. And then the community rallied to support her and they would, because she didn't make any money. So they'd buy her drinks when women were still allowed to go into the bar. After a while, they stopped women from going into the bar. So she had no place to go. And restaurants gave her food, and she died on December 5th, 1914, and her funeral was the largest the town had ever seen.
Oh, Mary.
Yeah.
Because she touched some hearts.
She did. She was changing hearts and minds. So that's Mary.
Okay.
So we should have a movie about her.
We just have a movie. I didn't even remember this is not this in depth.
Well,
but we're gonna.
Well, there's one more.
Okay.
Want to hear about one more?
Yeah.
Okay. This is...
But we got to get the movies made about that. I really want to see the movie now.
Okay. Yes, so this is a movie that needs to be made. I don't know how it's not already been made. Let Taraji do it.
Honestly, the USPS is failing.
It could use
they
this.
They need a revamp.
People get excited about the mail again.
Right.
This is what it needs. Okay, this one is super dope as well.
Okay. I gotta do my...
Robert Smalls.
I think I know Robert.
An escaped slave turned pirate.
Yes!
Okay? So the story is wild. This is wild. So in the midst of the Civil War, this black male slave had commandeered a heavily armed Confederate ship and delivered 17 black passengers, 9 men, 5 women, and 3 children from slavery to freedom.
Okay.
Here's how he did it. So Robert Smalls, he was born in April 5th, 1839.
In Aries.
Okay. Good to know. War charging. It's good. good for us to remember. Like, right. See, it sucks that like we didn't know what Mary's exact birthday is.
I was looking
is.
It
we
up, but she
know.
Probably was a Gemini. We,
okay. I'm just gonna claim that right. one for your people. Right. She could have been emotional. No,
nah, that okay. she was fighting no. and winning. Okay. Yes,
and winning. The two tenets of being Gemini. Fighting and winning. It's what we do.
Oh
it's your two
God,
halves.
Wait.
If you're not fighting, you're winning.
Exactly.
So he was born in South Carolina. His mother, Lydia, at the age of 9, mm-hmm. she was taken from the islands and to work in the fields. They just took her. She just was hanging on the islands and they were like, hey, you, go to the fields. And then she the worked rice. Her way from the fields into the house. Mm-hmm. So she worked her way up as you could, you know, in the cushy house job.
Right.
And nobody knows exactly who his father is, but it could have been, it was a Maury Povich situation. It could have mm-hmm. been the master's son, or the plantation manager.
Nah, definitely.
So one white guy raped her.
Right.
But gave birth to Smalls. And
Robert Smalls.
The white owners well, loved Smalls so much over the other slave kids, because he was a little different, probably a little lighter skin, mm-hmm. obviously. And his mother was like, uh-oh, he might grow up to, like, not understand that this is bullshit.
Yeah.
And so she's like, I need to teach my son history.
I like that.
Which is, that's, like, it goes back to, like, why it's so important to know your history, mm-hmm. because you'll understand the context of everything.
Yeah.
And she actually had him go to the whipping post. She's like, go to the whipping post. I want you to see what happens out there at the whipping post. He saw that, and he was like, well, this is fucked up. And he right. became, like, a rebel. He was often ending up in jail. He was just like, fuck the police type of guy. He was just rebelling. Then his mom was like, uh-oh, I think I did this too far. So then she was like, I need to send him away. So she sent him, she had the talk with him of like, mm-hmm. boy, you can't be doing that. You're black.
Yeah.
You can't be wilding out like this.
Right. Like, you're a little light skinned, but you got to stop.
Yeah. So she, again, early conversations, mm-hmm. tales all the time. They've been having the talk for generations. So she sent him up to Charleston, South Carolina, to be rented out for work. Again, like,
isn't that only slavery?
It is.
But sorry, like, I'm sorry.
Well, he was actually. It's so crazy because, like she did like the best a mother could do at that time.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Like, again, like she like worked her way from the fields into the house.
Yeah.
Sent her son to be rented out for work. He did get to like retain some of the money. At 19, he was doing a number of jobs and he was allowed to keep like $1 of his wages. A week. So he got to keep a dollar for himself. The owner took the rest. So he was making some money.
Mm.
The CEO was the greatest teacher. Like, he knew his shit. Like, he just became really at home. And he got a job on the CSS Planter. I thought it said Panther at first. I was like...
Oh, I think...
Ooh, yeah.
Right.
Planter. It was a first-class coastways steamer. It had local cotton and live oak and red cedar. And he met his wife there, Hannah.
Hannah. Wait.
She's a slave.
Okay, thank
you. White lady.
Hannah.
We all had white names back then.
Oh, God. You gave me a heart attack. Wow. Sorry.
We can't all be...
After all that, with the Hannah? Oh, my God.
So Hannah, she was a slave working for the Kingman family, working at the Charleston Hotel. And the owner let him and his wife move into an apartment. He had a very nice master.
Mm-hmm.
Let him move into an apartment with... They had two kids, Elizabeth and Robert Jr. And he was like, shit, I got to get my family out of this because, like, we can't be in this slavery for all this long. And he was like, how much? And the owner was like, $800. And he was like, I only got $100. And the owner's like, we'll figure it out. So he's like, shit, how am I gonna get $700 to, like, you know, get my family? It's gonna take forever.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, but wait a minute, I look just like my boss, Captain J. Relia.
He looked like his boss?
He did, because his boss was maybe out in the sea a lot and got like a little bit more of a tan, and he was lighter skinned. Everybody used to joke about how much they looked alike. And there was a bunch of setting it up. So in South Carolina, there's a bunch of union ships that are just further ahead that are like making it so you can't, so the Confederates aren't able to get any trade coming in. Mm-hmm. The unions got them blocked. And these ships were accepting slaves. Like, if you were to escape over there, the union ships would accept you and, like, you know, free you.
Mm-hmm.
So Smalls had a plan. May 12th should be like Robert Smalls' day.
Right.
Like, yeah. So we're in Charleston, South Carolina. Where the first shots of the Civil War were actually fired. Little, you know, note there. And Planter was, the ship was making a bunch of rounds in the islands, and it came back to South Carolina, and it was heavily stocked at this point. At 200 rounds of ammunition, 32 pounds of pivot guns, like a bunch of guns, all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. And there were these three white officers who were feeling like really saucy. They were like, we just got back from the islands. I don't want to stay on this ship. Like, I want to like let my hair down, go into the city. But like, they knew like, you weren't supposed to leave your ship alone, because it was like, you know, there's these slaves on there, and like, yeah, who knows what they might do, you know, and they could be like put to prison, the white folks, for leaving the slaves alone with the ship. Mm-hmm. But they were like, the captain was like, you know what, I trust them, they're gonna be fine, they want to do anything crazy. He's like, I trust these eight slaves. Robert Smalls, he was like, now's my chance. And he's been sailing the water since he was a teenager. He was intelligent, resourceful, like, just, like, he just knew his shit. And he was like, all right, this is the moment I've been waiting for. He'd been planning this for weeks as he knew the route. He knew what they were going to do. And he rallied them all together. And he was also known, like, just a little backstory, like, he was a pivotal part of, like, the captain's ship. He was, like, as high-ranking as you could be as a slave on the ship. So, like, he knew his shit. He knew all the signals. Yeah. And so, like I said, he was planning this for weeks. And it went like clockwork. He picked up his family members at a rendezvous point. Like, is like clockwork. So he picked up the families at a rendezvous point, then slowly navigated his way through the harbor because he knew how to sail and do all this shit. And then he doubled as the captain. He put on the captain's hat, disguised himself as the captain, wore it really low, and responded with all the proper code signals. They had all these code signals, and he knew it. And so they kept letting him through all the different checkpoints, including Fort Sumter itself and all these other defensive positions. He cleared, and then they sailed into the open seas. And when they got out of Confederate waters and into the Union areas, they drew the white flag as, like, we're surrendering. Oh, yeah. And then the Union folks picked them up. And
what?
Where's this movie?
No, that, I mean, both of them have to be a movie, but it's like,
yeah,
there's a climax.
Well, and then here's the epilogue. So Congress, then when he got on the other side, Congress gave him $1,500 for the ship that he commandeered.
Oh, wow.
And which, remember, like, he didn't have, he only had $100.
Right.
But then history shows that he actually should have been paid way more.
Of course.
So, yeah.
There's mad ammunition on that.
Yeah, you only have $500, but at the time,
I mean,
that
doesn't look, I gotta get to freedom. Adios.
And I got my family, my kids. Yeah. And actually, the Confederates had a 4,000 bounty on his head, so that's how much the ship and everything was really worth, like, way more. And then he actually personally lobbied the Secretary of War, Edwin Slanton, to begin enlisting black soldiers. So he's part of the reason why black soldiers started fighting in the Union in the Civil War. And then after President Lincoln did do that a few months later, Smalls went right back into action, and he recruited 5,000 soldiers himself. He was out there at the sea, like, battling away. And he, on October 1862, he returned to the Planter as a pilot as part of South Atlantic blockading squadron. So he was there in the trenches. He was involved in 17 military actions in the Civil War. He was promoted to the rank of captain. And in 1863, he earned $150 a month, making him the highest paid black soldier of the war.
Wow.
Making that money.
Robert Small.
He then became a first generation black politician, serving in South Carolina State Assembly and Senate. And for 5 non-consecutive terms in the U.S. House of Representatives, he became a congressperson. And then from 1874 and 1886, he served from 1874 to 1886. And then watched as his state rolled back Reconstruction and a revised 1865 Constitution that stripped black folks of their voting rights. So he got to witness that.
Wait, can you repeat that again?
So this isn't a good thing. Like, that's, he saw this great stuff happening. And so then, so he's serving his term in the House of Representatives. And then he watched as, after Reconstruction, in 1895, they stripped black folks of their voting rights.
But I mean, I'm sure he didn't like vote.
No, he didn't. He just like watched it happen before his eyes. He died in February 22nd, 1915. Oh, his birth. Well, his death date. Oh, yeah. Well, we got to celebrate him anyways.
Yeah.
And he died. Where was it? He was buried behind a bust at the Temple's Baptist Church, which I think is nearby. by like where he died. And this is one of his last quotes. He said, "My race needs no special defense for the past history of them and this country. It proves them to be equal of any people anywhere. All they need is an equal chance in life and battle. All they need is an equal chance in the battle of life."
You know, that sounds very much like the Michelle Obama quote.
Oh, yeah.
I gotta pull it up where okay. she's like, yeah. "We just need that opportunity.
That's all we're looking for.
Watch us work.
That's it. Watch us
work."
I
mean, I obviously like paraphrased it OD, but
yeah. But that's Robert Smalls. Aren't those two amazing stories of like, where the fuck are their movies?
Right. I really enjoyed that, James.
Yeah. Well, and welcome.
Dude, I hope everybody else enjoyed that.
You know, they did.
Right. They better. No, I'm kidding. That was a really good recap and very important to know. And I wish that they taught more. I mean, there's so many prominent Black people that aren't being taught.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, well, there's two more for you. Get the popcorn, and get to work, Hollywood.
Right. I also wanted to take back the fact that I said that water signs are not. Because
okay.
I looked up Harriet Tubman's sign.
And she's a water sign. She's a Cancer. Oh, she's a Pisces. See?
So, I take it back. Boom. I'm so glad I said about water signs.
We be doing stuff.
Hi, I'm the JV Club podcast, Janet Varney, and I used to suffer from indecision. I couldn't choose between Star Wars and Star Trek, whether to call or text, or the best way to cook my eggs. But now, thanks to my weekly dose of We Got This on Maximum Fun, my decisions are made for me. Thanks, Mark and Hal!
Warning, We Got This may cause shouting, phone throwing, the illusion that the hosts can hear you, laughter on public transit, and death.
We Got This with Mark and Hal. We know what's best.
Glory's corner, glory's corner, glory, 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 glory's corner.
Hallelujah!
Ooh, yeah, she took it there. We are recording on a Sunday, so she took us to church.
Right, let them know.
But praise.
James did his really amazing recap of two Black people that need movies.
Yeah.
So hopefully in 2020, we start getting the production.
You know, we broke the story about the Hidden Figures ladies before it was a movie.
So really?
We spoke it
somebody,
into existence.
Someone's
listening to the show.
Someone's listening and not giving you credit. That's
yeah,
what
you see those two
time.
Movies come up, right, you're like, wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
Right.
Wait.
Where's my part?
Right.
Get me in that movie.
Not James. Somebody took your idea. You need to sue.
All right. Well, we're looking for a lawyer.
Yeah, right. But yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about when James invited me. I was like, oh my God, I want to piggyback on what he's talking about because it's so important.
Okay, yeah.
So I wanted to talk about five women that are members of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated.
Ooh.
That you should know.
And what is the sorority for those who don't know?
Thank you. I was just about to say. So actually, I'm a member of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated.
Okay.
It's a story that was founded on the first Black campus in the United States, Howard University.
And it's one of the nine.
It's one of the Divine Nine.
Yes. And the Divine Nine are the Black fraternities and sororities.
Yeah, pretty much. And
they have like their own call. What's your call? Can you do your call?
We're not doing all that today. Oh, okay.
Is it Ski-wee?
No, don't make me upset. I'll take my ass back home. Thank you. And we were founded on January 16 in 1920. Thank you. By our five Pearls, right. Arizona Cleaver Stemmons,
okay.
Pearl Anna Neal, Myrtle Teller Faithful, Viola Teller Goings, and Fanny Petty Watts.
Mm.
And yeah, I want to talk about some prominent Zetas that are out there in the world,
yes,
that you might not even know are Zeta.
Right.
So one of my favorite ones to tell is actually Minnie Riperton. She is right.
Minnie Riperton, who did a doo 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 doo.
Yeah, the song. She does that loving you.
That's her.
Oh, she's a soror.
Okay.
Yeah. And she's actually Maya Rudolph's mom.
Oh, you're right.
Right? Yeah.
And Maya Rudolph went to UC Santa Cruz. And Maya Rudolph went to UC Santa Cruz.
Oh, okay.
Look at us being connected to the Riperton's.
Boom,
we got you.
In some way. Yeah. then we have Gwendolyn Brooks. She was the first African-American to win the Pulitzer Prize.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yep.
We're out here.
Yep.
Violet N. Anderson, the first African-American woman to practice law before the U.S. Supreme Court.
Okay.
Thank you.
Damn.
Right?
Hello.
We're out here.
Out here doing it.
Zora Neale Hurston. She is...
Their eyes were watching God.
Right. And one of the trailblazers Blazers of the Harlem Renaissance.
Hell yeah. We're in Harlem right now.
Hello.
Do you know we're also, so we're recording this in Harlem.
Yeah.
And you know I live across the street from where James Baldwin went to elementary school?
It's now
it's a high school. Okay. But it used to be, that's his elementary school.
Yeah. You know, it's fun fact, this is a little bit of a tangent.
We love tangents.
I need to get like I said, I just woke up, but the guy who wrote Invisible Man actually used to live a block away. And like not at the same time.
Right.
But he used to live a block away from where I live.
Yeah.
Rolf Ellison, and there's actually a statue when you go to 150, I think it's 152nd Street.
Yeah.
That is a statue of the Invisible Man.
Oh, is it invisible?
Well, it is it's like an outline of.
Oh, that's clever. Because right. I was like, I could make an invisible statue. I would be like, James, you see my invisible statue? Like,
no.
Don't you see it? It's an invisible guy.
Nah, it's there.
Okay, that's dope.
Right, because you know white people, they be trying to finesse us. And then the last woman I wanted to bring up is Cheryl Underwood, who is a Zeta and a comedian with comedy.
Okay.
That was important to bring up as a comedian.
It is.
Yeah.
And Glory is also on that list.
Not yet. I'm not prominent yet.
Well, I mean, you're prominent. You're on the minority corner. That's a pretty, that's a good little pillar, little notch on the totem pole over there.
I did that. But I hope to be on that list one day.
You're already on into my life. Yeah. Speak it into existence. I'm glad that you brought this up though too, because it's weird. The nine have been coming into my life a lot the last few weeks. Because I remember when my aunt, she's getting her master's or PhD in something. Yeah. And my brother and I were like 8 years old and we're just hearing like, ski-wee.
Oh, God.
Like all these like things.
Sorry. Out,
all these different calls. And we were just giggling because we were like children, we don't know.
Yeah.
And then I watch The View like every morning.
Yeah.
And Kamala Harris was speaking at, she's an alpha.
She's an AKA.
AKA.
Yeah.
And one of my friends is an AKA as well. And Sunny,
yeah.
Who you remind me of Sunny so much, because you both are both from the Bronx.
I have my things with Sunny. Like, I just think sometimes she says some problematic things. And I know that as the only like woman of Whoopi, Whoopi's on the show
on
too, right?
But Whoopi's also like an old rich black lady, so she's it's a different. Little,
but sometimes she just says some things. I know she means well.
Yes.
And it's just like,
Sunny sometimes, like, she's come around on things. She sometimes pretends to be like the voice of reason for people of color.
Right. I was like, baby.
Yeah. There's some things where I'm just like, Sunny. Yeah. You guys do should remind me. Sometimes the way you guys talk, your mannerisms and stuff, I'm like, you guys were neighbors or something.
Maybe.
But she
maybe
was
a Gemini.
She was an AKA. Oh my God. Classified by that. She was an AKA as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Kamala Harris, a Libra. Oh, God. So Kamala Harris is also an AKA, and she was giving some sort of speech.
Yeah.
And there was some reporter who was like, I didn't think I'd hear all this screeching here.
Yeah.
And so, like, she didn't understand what was happening.
Yeah.
So, again, like, either do your research before you go into something or send someone who knows about that sort of culture and stuff.
Don't even fucking call it screeching without knowing what it is.
Exactly. That's
like,
the thing.
Yeah.
Well, and so then I told my friend about this. My friend is also an AKA.
Oh, wow.
And then I went to BET's premiere in Boomerang.
Okay. No invite. Okay.
I barely got the invite. It was over at Viacom.
Okay.
So BET's, it's like a reboot.
Mm-hmm.
Not a remake, but a reboot of the movie Boomerang that came out.
I love it.
I've actually like...
You know... Sorry. You know, there's actually a program that was inspired by Boomerang, an advertising program. I need to look it up. Sorry. I need to look up so much shit. I searched Boomerang in Gmail.
Nope.
So finish what you were saying. I'm going to bring it back up.
Okay.
Because it's important for people to know about these programs.
Well, when I was there, and it's like a lot of people who are like heads in the marketing industry and of like film and television and stuff, then it was all black people there at the special event. And they were all like, there's different people, like they did a call of like all the different people who were part of like the nines and they were like, Nine and people were doing their different like their call outs and stuff. And I just was like, damn. See, I wish I had like, well, there were no fraternities or anything or sororities at my school at UC Santa Cruz.
Oh, where did you? Oh, yeah.
UC Santa Cruz. There weren't any allowed. But it was like, I think just what a cool, I don't know. They've just been coming back into my life. And they're
the thing is that they're
so important.
Everyone's everywhere. And I think a lot of prominent people of color, African Americans, and part of the reason why I joined my sorority was because a lot of people that are the Divine Nine were at the forefront of the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's important. For me, you know, I don't want to say I could have joined any sorority, but if I wanted to join, I wanted to join a sorority that was very integral to that part of history, because that part of history is the reason why I'm able, what I'm doing now. So yeah, I was like, you know.
And do you feel like the Divine Nine is still important today?
It's always going to be important.
Yeah.
I think that's because of the age of internet, there's some things that are kind of overshared. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that should be, a lot of discussion isn't practiced as much anymore. And I think that's something to do more with the younger generation that's coming about, but it's going to always be.
Yeah.
Everybody, I don't say everybody that's important was in is Greek, but it's like a lot of the people that have opened doors for other people have been.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what happens with a lot of these folks in these, you know, white organizations who go off to Princeton and sort of things. And it's these connections that they're able to build. And so it's so beautiful to see Black folks being able to do that for each other. Yeah. And just
the difference between the NPHC and other organizations is that sometimes the white organizations, like, it just ends at college. It's like, yeah, okay, we did this for 4 years and yeah, that's
but
it.
But this continues.
This,
like,
is
deep,
a lifetime.
A lifetime thing. Yeah.
And it's not, and a lot of the opportunities that I've been giving, especially in advertising before, that was my previous career, were by people from the Divine Nine. Like, oh, you're Zeta, we're going to put you on here.
Yeah.
Thank you, you know? I'm trying to find the name of the program. There's a program, there's an advertising program that's named after the main character in Boomerang for people of color interested in marketing.
And Boomerang was a big deal because at the time, people had never seen Black folks in such prominent jobs, mm-hmm, like advertising and stuff,
yeah,
like that. And so this TV show that's happening in BET, I saw the first episode. It's pretty good. Can't wait to be casted on it.
Right. Hello, call us. I know you're running
listening. Yeah. I know you're listening and stealing our movie ideas.
Right.
And so it takes place 25 years later, and it's their kids.
Oh, wow.
So it's still continuing. Because Halle Berry and Lena Waithe, the wife from Masters of None, they're producing it. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, that's it. Well,
yes. Marcus. Okay, I need to find the name of this program.
Okay, well, it's okay. We'll come back from break.
Okay.
She's determined.
You're
our
right.
Fact checker. And, like, Glory takes it very seriously. Well, we might have the facts for you right after this break. Glory, glory.
Hallelujah.
Oh, you better sing. Uh-oh, Babyface just called. He wants to sign you up for a contract. He's going to take your money.
You said not to go
I
with
know,
it.
don't. But yeah, he's the one that called. Glory, it's been so great having you here on the show.
Fun, James,
it was so great to have you as our first, you know, co-host filling in. I just want to read a quick tweet. You can tweet at us, get involved in the conversation. We had this wonderful tweet from @CBangChans. You can tweet at Minority Corner. And they tweeted, at Minority Corner deserves so much more hype and recognition. Like, come on, y'all. Please come support these amazing POC. What a dope little tweet.
It was cute.
I love that.
And yes, they need to fucking be listening.
They should be listening. And so you're on Twitter.
I am on Twitter. You can find me at Pretty Funny Glow,
yes,
or on Instagram. Glory is pretty funny. I don't know why, but sometimes I guess, like, the way I say my name it sounds like Lori instead of Glory.
People are following Lori. It's pretty funny.
Yeah,
like, now Lori is getting all these followers.
Right.
Who the fuck is Lori?
Right, it's Glory. Like, Glory Hallelujah is pretty funny.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah. It's been so great having you on the show. Is there something that you can tell us? Where can they find you doing some comedy soon here in New York?
Yes. So, well, first, I found the name of the program. It's a Marcus Grant Graham project. I probably fucked up his name.
If you are Black and in the world of advertising,
sign up. Look into that or add color. In terms of my comedy, I will be.
Because you've been all over the place.
I went to Hawaii.
You were in San Francisco, LA.
I'm out here, James.
And I'm so proud of you because you, like, left your day job. What a great inspiration. A woman who left her day job to go pursue her dream in comedy. You weren't doing this a year ago, and you're doing it now. And now you're on Minority Corner. Babyface is about to sign you.
Right. Whoa.
I mean, you're doing it.
I'm out here. But yeah, I'm trying to think of what shows. I have a show at Yonkers Comedy Club, February 22nd. I'm going to be at the Slipper Room at my own production, Strawberry Milk, on February 26th.
Oh, yeah.
And then in Harlem at the Hexagon Lounge on February 28th, and my other friend out here.
Damn, I love it. You're just doing it. It was so great having you. What a natural fit. This was just so much fun. And big thanks to Woody, our editor, and big thanks to Brownout. Thank you for the music. And thank you to all of our listeners. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we say this together.
Together.
We're the majority.
Oh, okay. 1, 2, 3.
We're the majority. Well done. Yeah.
Yay!
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.